This is News Director Larissa Donovan continuing on the campaign trail with the Meet the Candidates series. Joining me in studio today is a current representative in the Minnesota House. With redistricting, he's running for a new district to be. Welcome to the studios, Matt Bliss.
Thanks, Larissa. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you, and glad you could fit us into your schedule. I'm sure it's been a busy season.
Yeah, this week, over the past 7-8 days, I've thought about it. I don't think I've started the day and ended the day in the same area for a whole week, so it's been busy.
I believe it. So for those who may not know about what the new district looks like, have you found an easy way to describe it yet?
Well, I say it's Kellyer to Callaway. So Kellyer on the north east side down to Deer River, Reamer, and then all the way over to Callaway, all of Minoman County.
All right. Kellyer to Callaway. Nice alliteration there. Kudos. So your term is still current in the Minnesota House, right?
Correct, until January.
Okay. So what inspired you to throw your hat in the ring again? Again.
Well, when you're in the minority, you there's a lot of issues that come across your desk that you find interesting and you want to push, and I did that last year. There was most of them just kind of sat out in the ether and did nothing but take up space. Hopefully we're back in the majority this time and we can do a little bit more.
So when I think of the Minnesota House, words that come to my mind are gridlock, bickering. What are some of the ideas you have to, like, get things going again for the people of Minnesota?
Well, hopefully this year we're going to be in person. And the whole idea of being on Zoom was just, you couldn't get anything done. A lot of times the negotiations are done between committee meetings on your way from one to another. You pick up the phone and you call somebody and say, hey, can I swing by? I got an idea to discuss. That just didn't happen on Twitter. A lot of times on Zoom.
Many other things happened on Twitter.
and you know, if there's some tense words in a committee meeting, you can, you know, make up and, you know, this is what I meant to say and this is where I'm coming from. And a lot of times you can iron over some things. With Zoom, it was you just hit the end button and, you know, it just stuck, you know, and you got bad feelings the rest of the day. So I think being in person is going to get a lot done. We really want to try to do away with the majority of the omnibus bills this year.
Those mega packages.
The mega packages.
For people who may not be well-versed.
Yeah, 900-page-long bills with just untold number of separate bills included in it. And like I said before, you know, you work this bill, you work it all the way through the committee process. And at the end, the last committee goes, we're going to hold it for possible inclusion in the omnibuses. And then it just goes there to either maybe get included if somebody has, you know, time for it, or it just kind of dies. You just don't have any control after that. So we want to get rid of that, bring it up more on an individual basis, try to dig more into the budgets and find out where the money's actually being spent. There's a lot of waste in the government right now where if you have, I think it's Minnesota Department of Education right now has 40 open seats. And every time a new program comes along, they add 10% onto the bottom line because they got to add more full-time employees for this new program. But at the same time, there's 40 open seats that they have basically a slush fund. So we want to dig into that. You know, if you're going to hire some people and you need the people, we'll fund it. But if they're just going to sit there as an extra slush fund, we're just going to take them away. So we got to really dig into the budgets and look at stuff like that.
So speaking of education, I know that's, for my co-host Todd Haugen, that's an issue that's near and dear to his heart, the transportation formula. It hurts us. It hurts us here, Matt.
It does. And again, that is a bipartisan issue. There's Democrat seats that have to deal with this and the Republican seats. We did address it in 17 and 18. 18.5%, I think we got you, and then we were going to bump it up to 30 this year, and it just kind of died with everything else. So it is an issue that everybody's looking at. You know, I don't know how much it is now, but I think, like I mentioned with Todd before, there's more pressing issues, in my opinion, of where we can get more money to the local schools. And again, you know, the Minnesota Department of Education is too big. We need to downsize them and get a lot of that money back to the local schools and put the power back into the school boards to decide how your school is going to be run.
So for slimming down NDE, do you hope to see it like broken down more by like department, like where they focus? I'm not even sure of the huge hierarchical structure.
I don't think anybody's sure of the hierarchical structure of MDE. It's a monstrosity. And I don't want to pick on MDE. Every department down there has their issues. Every department, when a new bill comes along and it's going to put an extra burden on them, they automatically add 10% to the bottom of the bill for their department to fund it. And sometimes it's justified, and a lot of times I don't believe it is. So again, we need to really take the time and dig into it. You know, when I went down there the first time, we had like 2.5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks of just departments coming in and kind of showing a PowerPoint of exactly what they did. Well, that's really just a waste of time. You know, we need to dig in on day one, start introducing bills. I think the Social Security tax cut might go through quicker than most other ones, because again, that's a bipartisan bill. I think, you know, there's other issues that we can maybe push forward a little faster as well.
Speaking of time, the Minnesota legislature's session is a bit limited, some may say.
Thank you. Yes.
And with your ideas about breaking up those omnibus bills and things like that, would that take more time? Do you hope to see a longer legislative session?
No, not at all. I am opposed completely to a full-time legislature. I like coming back to the district. I like keeping my feet on the ground here. You look at what happens in Washington, D.C. with a full-time legislature. A lot of those people don't even live in their districts anymore. They live in Washington, D.C. They become completely disconnected. We're a citizen legislature, and that's the way it should be. I need to come back. I have a small business here. I got family here. I don't want a full-time legislature. I think we can certainly do it. It's going to take some shuffling to completely redo the paradigm down there and get rid of the "this is the way we've always done it" mentality, and just look at some things. You'll see some changes, I think, if we get in the majority.
So I know another big issue on the docket a big part of the state conversation is crime. And, you know, I just read something about Brooklyn Park had 20 carjackings in like a day with the technology that, you know, these criminals can use to, you know, get into the car's electronic systems and just take off with it.
Well, actually, the Kias, I think there's a recall on them. You don't even need technology to get into those.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, you know, I heard a number, and forgive me if it's wrong, but it stuck in my head because it was such a large number. I think it's 6,000 assaults in Minneapolis so far this year. Crime rate is up considerably. Murder rates in Minneapolis is up considerably. It's spilling over into the suburbs. And you have one of the things you look at when you see these big headlines where somebody gets murdered, and they'll put the profile of the individual, the murderer, on the TV. Look at how many times in the past year or two he's been arrested and released. It's crazy. I've speaking to some police officers in Minneapolis, and they said that for carjacking, the kids will be out on the streets before they get the paperwork done for that carjacking.
And if they're doing it as a minor.
Yep. And you know, it's not just kids. I mean, there's a lot of the prosecutors in these big cities are just not prosecuting crimes. And, you know, if you can just get out and not worry about it, they're going to continue to do it. And again, if you look at the individuals that are being caught and arrested and you look at the rap sheets, very, very long rap sheets with very little time served. And so that would tell me that the majority of the crime is being committed by very few people, and we just need to lock those people up.
In courts, I know locally that backlogs are a big problem. I mean, there's a huge caseloads, not enough prosecutors, not enough public defenders.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know every year when we have the budget, I know the district court comes and asks for more money, pardon me. We do generally give them additional funding. I am not familiar with the backlogs in these courts. Thanks, I'm not part of them. Thank you. But I do know that that we need to prosecute the criminals, and we need to hold them accountable. We can't be just dismissing these cases. There was I forget where he's out of, but they just had it on the news the other day, a local prosecutor, since he became prosecutor in that city, the crime, he dismisses two-thirds of the cases, and that goes from the nonviolent all the way up to the violent crimes. He dismisses two-thirds of them. and the crime rate in that city has quadrupled. It's just incredible what, you know, we just need to do it. If it's going to take more money, we can put more money into it. The crime rate has skyrocketed in the past few years, and I can't believe that the budget issues have creeped up that fast. Something else has changed, so we need to address that.
You know, the longer prison sentences, like you said, will cost the taxpayers more money.
Well, will it? I mean, you hold that against the number or the cost of the crimes that are being committed, you know, the public safety. Look at what the crime situation has cost the city of Minneapolis right now. I don't know a lot of people that go down there and enjoy a day in the city anymore. I used to service Minneapolis as a field technician. And I would park my car on one end of the city, and I would walk all day. And I had no problem doing that. It didn't matter where I went. I would walk. One of my accounts, I didn't walk to this one, but was Abbott Northwestern. And that was a little bit rough neighborhood back then, but still I had no problem parking my car two blocks away and walking to the office. And, you know, things have changed down there. And that's cost the city a lot in tax. It's cost them in businesses. There's a lot of businesses. I believe Target Corporation now says they're not even requiring their people to go downtown anymore. They can work from home if they want. So, you know, you're losing a lot of the restaurants and the skyways, and, you know, losing a lot of business. So yeah, it'll cost more in taxpayer money to hold them, but, you know, I think it'll more than make up for it in other ways.
What about crime prevention strategies? Do you have any ideas on those? Like, what can we do to get these young people before they choose this life of crime?
Yeah, there's a place in St. Cloud. It's called the Cop House. It's kind of where you go to visit with police officers in not a threatening manner. You know, maybe play air hockey with them. Maybe sit down and have a Coke or something. I think that's good. You know, we need more officers on the streets. People need to understand that they're not there to hurt them. They're there to protect them. We also need to teach our young people to respect law enforcement a little bit more. You see the videos of water bottles being thrown at police officers when they're trying to make a traffic stop. That's just disgusting in my mind. But, you know, we need to get these law enforcement officers more part of the community. And I think just having a place like that, a cop house or something, will help. But we do need to fund law enforcement and get more law enforcement on the streets. There's not a better way to deter crime than have law enforcement officers all over.
It's always one of my favorite bits when I do my blotter reports. Officers playing basketball with kids in the park, for instance.
Absolutely,
love that. Love to see it.
Yeah.
More issues, what's somewhat related, at least as far as we see here locally with our crime situation and jailing situation here in Beltrami County, is a really big need for more mental health services and chemical dependency services.
Sure. And one of the things you see with crime, with crime is a high number of the people are unfortunately in need of mental health care. And that's, you can take mental health care and bring it and put it in every facet of our society today. You know, you talk to the early childhood teachers, they're seeing the children with issues, either because their parents were doing drugs or alcohol when they were pregnant, or, you know, maybe they stayed healthy when they're pregnant, but now they're sleeping on the couch when their kids are supposed to getting ready to school. And the kids are going to school, dressing themselves, you know, without a jacket in the wintertime. And, you know, that's, mental health can be tied to every one of those issues. And that's a big issue that we need to address.
It's like a great big continuum, you know, from childcare to schools.
It's the chicken or the egg, you know. Do you address it in the early childhood, or do you address it, you know, which one causes the other?
Yeah, it's either, you know, address these issues head on in the early childhood phase or see them later in the criminal justice system.
Right, but at the same time, you can't throw away the people that are already suffering from it.
All right, we are running out of time for this segment, and I have a few more questions. Another big item being discussed on the statewide scene is the issue of abortion, mm-hmm. the Roe v. Wade overturning. What are your thoughts on what Minnesota is said to be a sanctuary state with trigger laws surrounding us?
So there's two things at play here. Roe v. Wade, for the people, a lot of people felt that it should have been a state issue, not a federal issue. The 10th Amendment said that if it's not specifically designated in the Constitution, then it falls back to the states. And I think that was a big issue. So in that respect of it, I think it was a good decision. I think it belongs at the state level. Now, in Minnesota, the Supreme Court in Minnesota has decided that it is a fundamental right and cannot be changed. There were some things that were recent. I think it was a federal judge overturned some controls on it, which I felt were important. The 24-hour waiting period, parental notification for youth, stuff like that. I've also said that, you know, I'm unabashedly pro-life. I want to see abortions gone. But I also know that similar to what we had in the 20s and teens in this country with prohibition, if you just outlaw something without changing the hearts, then that's going to happen. And there were a lot of people that were killed with you know, poison bathtub gin. Mm-hmm. So I don't want that to happen either. I you know, there's two ways to do it: change law and change hearts. And I'd like to work on changing the hearts. So Roe v. Wade, I do support the Supreme Court decision because I felt it belonged with the states. In Minnesota, the Supreme Court has said that it's not going to be touched, and that would take years and years and years and years and years to address that. So I'd like to see us put some guardrails on it. You know, the restrictions. Where do you end? Do you support abortion up to and including the day of birth? Or do you support it at a certain level? And I think that's a discussion that we as a society in this state need to have.
And some may argue that those are also discussions for women and their medical providers.
True, but you know, one of the things in the Bill of Rights, one of the first bill that's enumerated in the Bill of Rights is the right to life. So, you know, where does this life begin? And that's the decision that you have to make. And my feeling is that it begins at birth. Other people believe it. I'm sorry, at conception. Other people believe it's when the child comes out of the womb. And in some cases, the laws have been so. If it was a botched abortion, the child was born alive, they put it in a tray and let it just cry itself to death, which is horrible. And if you want to look at who voted for that, it was called the Born Alive Bill in Washington, D.C. That was actually a bill that said if the child is born alive, it's granted care, but there wasn't a lot of people on one side that voted for that. So that's a decision, or that's a discussion we have to have. When does life begin? When is that child in the womb actually considered a human life? And that's something we need to talk about.
All right. Well, any other, on that topic, any other closing remarks or thoughts before I let you go today?
Yeah. Early voting starts on Friday. And get out there and vote. It's very important. Turnout is always critical. When you have a low turnout, it does not reflect the will of the community. So make sure you get out and vote.
It's you know, fun. You get a cool sticker.
And, of course, I'd prefer you vote for me. But, you know, hey.
I think you have to say that.
Yeah, I think so. I appreciate the opportunity to come in here and talk to you, Sir Larissa.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming in. Matt Bliss for House District 2B.